From Hoboken to Spokane, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader. And our guest today is Justin Thompson. He's a friend who I first got to know as a cartoonist. He writes and draws his own comic strip called Myth Tickle, which we'll ask him about. He's also a member of the staff of the Charles Schulz Studio, which approves Peanuts merchandising and helps create new Peanuts comic books and TV shows and that kind of thing. But that's just scratching the surface. Justin is also an actor and a stuntman, whose work has included Shakespearean plays, performing as a jouster at a Renaissance fair, portraying Batman in a Six Flags stunt show, and, the reason I asked him to be our guest, putting on the star-spangled Avengers red, white, and blue tights to portray Captain America himself. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Hal and Jim. I am honored to be here.
Oh, we're honored to have you. I think it's going to be a fun conversation. Hal, what's going on in this minute?
All right, minute 49. Backstage at a theater, Steve Rogers, now in a vibrant costume, grips a star-spangled shield, his face etched with uncertainty. "I don't know if I can do this," he mutters, his voice low. Brandt's assistant shrugs with easy confidence. "Nothing to it. You sell a few bonds. Bonds buy bullets. Bullets kill Nazis. Bing, bang, boom. You're an American hero." Steve glances at the shield, his expression conflicted. "It's just not how I pictured getting here." The assistant claps his shoulder. "The senator has got a lot of pull up on the hill. You play ball with us, you'll be leading your own platoon in no time. Take the shield. Go." Steve tugs a mask with the letter A over his face and steps out. The curtains part and the stage lights flare. Chorus girls in sparkling costumes launch into song, their voices ringing out. "Who's strong and brave, here to save the American way?" Steve steps onto the stage, his shield gleaming, and faces the crowd. He reads a script taped to the back of his shield. "Not all of us can storm a beach or drive a tank," he says, his voice gaining strength. "But there's still a way all of us can fight." The chorus girls sway, their song swelling. "Who vows to fight like a man for what's right, night and day?" Steve holds up his shield, reading from a series of index cards taped to the back of the shield. "Series E defense bonds. Each one you buy is a bullet in the barrel of your best guy's gun." The girls' voices soar, infectious and patriotic. "Who will campaign door to door for America? Carry the flag shore to shore for America. From Hoboken to Spokane, the star-spangled man with a plan." A montage of Captain America begins. He's holding up crying babies, shaking hands with Senator Brandt, and marching on a treadmill with Hollywood extras while filming a movie.
Thank you, Hal. That was
a mouthful.
Yeah, it was. Justin, I wanted to start out with your origin story. I'd love to tell just in a minute how you fell in love with comics, what they mean to you, and how you wound up actually making your living in the field, which is a hard thing to do.
Well, I started getting into comics around 1970, 71, my cousin had some Avengers comics, and I would just stare at those. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I would stare at them and those covers. And Captain America, I don't know what it was about that costume, but I just zeroed in on him. It was always my favorite. And then a couple of years later, I started working at home, getting allowances. So I'm going to buy some Captain America comics on my own. And that's when I started buying them and collecting. And that just bloomed into all of Marvel. But it was always about Captain America number one for me, you know, the main guy. But I grew up in the desert of north of Phoenix. It wasn't much around. And, you know, it was just, you know, kind of dull. I just wanted a bigger life. And eventually, I got a bachelor's degree in acting at Arizona State, and I got a scholarship to go to Rutgers Mason Gross School of the Arts in New Jersey to get my master's. Coincidentally, that is the same acting school that Sebastian Stan went to about 11 or 12 years after I left. So he and I had the same teachers, which was really neat to know, trying to imagine Bucky in those classes. But I, yeah, you know, and then acting, it was the thing. But I, when I was a kid, going back that way, I always drew the characters, trying to draw Captain America, you know, drawing off of frames and covers that I loved of the character. I'd look at that and just try to draw it. And that's kind of where my love of drawing came along. You know, all the little kids love to draw, but I never stopped.
Yeah, I think that's the key. You know, they say that every 8-year-old is an artist, and the only difference between them and, you know, other people and someone like you or I is that we kept doing it.
Yeah,
we didn't stop when we were 8 or 9 or 10.
There was some compulsion to keep going. I don't know what it was, but
tell us about the evolution of your costume stunt work, because from conversations we've had personally, I get the impression that jousting at a Renaissance fair was maybe the best job you ever had.
It was. It helped build my character. I had kind of low self-confidence getting out of grad school. You know, that place really just tore me apart emotionally. And I was kind of lost for a couple of years. I did some theater tours, Romeo and Juliet. I was always a good sword fighter. I was, and did well with that. So some people who I worked with the sword fighting said, you should work at this New York Renaissance Fair. We have some great sword fighters there and we could use you. So I got into that, and then there was a call. They wanted to use actors for the jousters, and they said that, you know, there were a couple of guys that came in from medieval times, said, we'll train you. So I grew up with horses. My dad was a horse trainer. And we owned racehorses when I was a little kid, and I was never afraid of horses, and I could ride. So I learned how to ride English, and I learned how to joust and, you know, basically ride a horse with my hands full of lance and shield and all that. But I mean, it was a lot of hardship in that, you know, you get hit hard, you'd fall off the horse, shoulder dislocations. It was hot and there was very little money, but something about that, I kept going. I wanted to get better at it. And I don't know if it was the kids watching, the audience, what, I don't know what it was, but I had to keep doing it. I had to keep coming back year after year for all that punishment. And, if I'd wound up doing it for 10 years, you know, wow. And it was always the kids for me going and doing that job. It's just, they'd see, you know, the hero of the day or whatever, the Queen's champion, Robin Hood. I played Robin Hood for several years there as, you know, a knight and jouster too. And, you know, you just do fist bumps throughout the day and they'd be in your cheering section. And I don't know what it was, just those kids, you know, seeing their faces light up when
Well, I imagine you got more of that. I think it was Batman next for you. I imagine you got a lot of that.
I did Batman at the same time I was doing the Renaissance Fair, juggling.
And
that was in a
full Six Flags stunt show, like on stage with the Batmobile. And
was that
and,
Great Adventures? Or I was trying to figure if you're doing
Great Adventure in New Jersey. Yeah, I did that for 3 years. I had a bat bike and you know, and swing in on a zip line and beat up the bad guys and. Yeah, it was the best. I did 5 shows a day in the summer on a tarmac with a black leather rubber suit.
Oh, good Lord.
I lost about 12 pounds every single day. It was great.
It was great, he said.
Sounds wonderful. Use that now. Yeah. That's what I need now, some kind of a
And then how did you get to be Captain America? What was that job?
That was really just meet and greet. There was no fighting involved in that, unfortunately. I would have loved to have fought guys with that costume. Would have been amazing. But that was working for Marvel. Just, you know, they would send out their characters for store openings and things like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I swear I'll give the other guys a chance to talk. But one reason I wanted to have you on this minute of the first Avenger movie in particular is that the uniform Steve Rogers wears in his USO show, which in the movie is kind of played for laughs, is actually the most comics accurate costume in the movie. And it's pretty much the one you wore too, right? The blue tights, the red boots, the,
yeah, you know, pretty much
the big stripes and star.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't wild about the blue in that costume that I wore. It was a little bit too light. And I never liked that in the comics when they would give him a pure cyan blue for his costume instead of the dark blue, which is always more reflective of the flag and a lot more just generally heroic looking, but I don't know, maybe they were cutting corners.
Yeah, extra ink, ink for real blue from you with the CMYK.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, one of my favorite memories from doing that was I knew a guy who was an artist, and he would paint these gigantic murals in New York City, and he painted one in an atrium area down in the Lower East Side and in the back of a restaurant. And they were having a big grand opening for it. A lot of people coming to see him, and they were going to show off the wall and everything, and it was a big deal. I was going to go surprise him. So I drove into this Manhattan. I was living in Jersey at the time. I drove into Manhattan in my costume, but I had the cowl back on my neck, and I'm driving around there in the East Village or the West, East Village, trying to find a parking place near this restaurant. I couldn't find anything. This is about 8 o'clock at night, 8:30. Finally, find a parking spot about a block and a half away. I'm like, oh, great! Finally, got a spot. I get out, put the cowl on, and I got the shield. And I went, I can't go walking through New York as Captain America. I got to get into character. So I ran the way Captain America would run, just down the streets. And there was a couple walking in front of me, my way. And I remember I was running, and I went, one side, citizen. And going, and at once, I'll never forget, this is one of the greatest moments of my life. Somebody yelled from the top of an old brownstone, probably the fourth floor, out the window, "Go get him, Cap!" So I was running to the restaurant. Man,
Gosh.
I'll never forget that as long as I live, because in that moment, I felt
That
real. I
is
felt real.
fantastic. And you could have gone from there straight over to Times Square and made a few bucks posing for pictures, right? Maybe
Well,
not at
if I would have made
that
money doing that, I probably would have gotten sued because that was not sanctioned. Marvel, I'd had the costume because the day before I did a store opening thing and I hadn't returned it yet. It was a weekend, so I just wanted to go surprise.
Your
Well,
rogue
if
Captain
Marvel
America
found out about
costume.
this, they'd be pissed, but I'm not working for them anymore anyway. So that's all. But
You
yeah, that
talked
was just a
about
little thing I did for my buddy.
that's wonderful. You mentioned getting into character, and I'd really love to explore that with you just a little bit, because it seems to me that you especially are an actor, you get into character, that when you suit up as Batman or Captain America, do you feel a responsibility to live up to what they represent? Do you feel more heroic when you put on the suit?
It is all about responsibility. You have to become the character because that is what is expected of you. You have to do what's expected. You can't go out there and act like a jerk in front of kids. You'll ruin it. It's not just ruining the character for a company. You're ruining the character in their hearts. You cannot do that. I wouldn't think of doing something like that. You have to live up to what they expect. Because who knows what kind of repercussions that's going to have on them later, because these are just little kids. And when after the stunt show, which I didn't necessarily feel heroic all the time doing a stunt show for those, 15, 20 minutes, I'm basically just hitting your marks and hoping you don't fall off the bat bike. But afterward, we'd come out and be some kids hanging out in the arena, to meet Batman and the Two-Face and the Riddler and the characters that were in the show. And you'd come up and they would just look at you. And boy, nothing told you more about responsibility in that moment than that. When those kids would look at you and they believed you were Batman, they just saw me swinging in on a line and beating up the bad guys, and I'm riding the Batmobile and a bat bike and everything. They believe that I'm Batman, and I have to be Batman then. And it just that's not an effort. That is an honor to represent that for them. And they went home thinking about Batman. I saw Batman. It's huge responsibility.
Incredible. Justin, one thing that was wondering about, just to circle back a little bit, in the Batman stage show and in theater and films and everything else, when we're talking about fight scenes, they are or can be very well choreographed, and we can pull punches and we can do all those things. But in jousting, that's way harder to fake.
You can't fake
I mean, you're really
that.
not faking it, right? And you're still getting hit by
No.
a stick and thrown off a horse. I
Yeah, you
sort of
gotta
like the
hit that shield just right to get the biggest twang. The biggest twang for your buck. You get the biggest noise.
And you gotta trust the other guy that knows what he's doing too.
Well, yeah, you're not only gonna have trust them that they're gonna hit your shield right, you're trusting them with your life. Because it is, you got these two horses. Mine was a quarter horse, his was a thoroughbred, and they're running as fast as we can get them to go. So that combined speed and that collision is lethal if it hits you in the head, or, you know, God forbid, I got hit in the chest once, but I mean, it could really mess you up. So you just trust that other person, and then you've got to take your own responsibility and present that shield right. But that impact, that sound, you can't fake that. And that's the part when you're watching it that you feel when you see it, you feel that impact. And then we'd all get knocked off of the horse, and then we'd be on the ground sword fighting. And, you know, that was, of course, choreographed sword fighting. But then you still had to hit those swords really hard to make that noise.
Right.
So that you couldn't fake. Movies and TV, yeah, you add a sound effect. Great. Sells it that way.
It must have been something. I mean, you said you're familiar with horses. I mean, the horses are already saddle-wise, but trying to get them used to every night you're going to hear this going on, right behind your ears. That must. Yeah. I mean, you must have some really calm horses.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to train them for a while, you know, to get that used to the noise. But then, you know, the horses we used after a few years, they knew what to expect, and that was a great. But yeah, sometimes we'd have to break in a new horse into the show, and that took a lot of daily practice, you know.
Wow.
Making a noise by their ear so they wouldn't flip out.
Well, let's talk a bit. I mean, we will get back to the minute, but so you're doing the stunt work. You've gone to Rutgers. You've been studying graphic arts and things like that. How did your career develop into doing strips?
Okay. Well, like I always, even when I was acting, I always kind of kept my hand in the art. When I was in high school, I did a couple of comic strips for the Phoenix Gazette and the Arizona Republic. Those were my local newspapers.
Wow.
You know, style illustrations and stuff like that my senior year. So I was already working as a professional cartoonist by the time I graduated. And I always kind of kept my hand in it. I would work for places that would do t-shirt designs, things like that. Just kind of freelance, even into the areas when I was hitting the boards in New York, acting for about 15 years, just kind of doing the illustrations for people. But then through an association with the Ren Faire, I knew somebody who was a receptionist for an art house, a place that did textiles, putting licensed characters on shower curtains and, you know, towels and beds and bedding. And she goes, they need an artist. So I'm like, oh, okay. And I went there and I interviewed, and they liked my portfolio because I had written a bunch of children's books on my own and drawn them and self-published them. So I showed that to them and they liked that. So they hired me on. So that's where I got my licensing background, working with licensed characters for that place in New York City. That was in the late 90s and early 2000s.
I'm interrupting you to ask you to tell the Spider-Man bed sheet story.
Oh, I didn't know you knew about that. We were using a lot of different licensed characters, and they wanted to try Marvel. They wanted to get that license, this house did. And I told them I had a big background in comic books, always been a fan. So they gave me the job, and like, all right, do some Spider-Man bedding. And we got a batch of artwork from Marvel that was based on Ultimate Spider-Man, which was popular at the time in the late 90s. And so I just arranged it in bedding and towels and things like that, and a shower curtain, and they presented it to Marvel and they got the contract based on that. And so for a few years I was their Marvel guy at this place called J. Franco and Sons, where I worked, and I did Hulk, Captain America, X-Men, all different kinds of bedding for Marvel with that. So
if you had Marvel bed sheets in the 90s, Justin did that.
I might have. They were always in Targets and Walmarts and things like that. But married, and then we had amazing. A kid, and my wife and I at the time, we wanted to go out west, and because she's from the Bay Area in San Francisco. So we wanted to raise a kid in the West. So we left New York, and I was looking for work for about a year and saw an ad for they needed somebody with licensing experience to work with Peanuts. And I applied and I got it.
Wow.
And that was about 23 years ago. Huh?
Wow.
Been there happily ever since.
Yeah, about 23 years, and I'm senior artist now.
You've had some neat experiences with the Schultz studio, particularly. I'd love it if you just touch on your mural work.
Jeannie Schultz organized a group to go to Havana, Cuba back around 2007 or 8, to do kind of a cultural exchange thing with some cartoonists from around the country, and she included me with it. And we went there and we met cartoonists on the island in Havana who worked for newspapers and other artists, and we just compared notes and we had meetings and talked with them. And there was a place in the barrio, in one of the poorer areas of Havana, called Muraleando, which was an artist community. And they had a lot of murals on these walls. Walls were everywhere, about 10 feet high. And they were beautiful murals. And they were signed by people from all over the world. And I remember saying to Jeannie, I said, this is such a shame because of the way things are with the United States and Cuba that we can't be represented here because it's so great. And she's thought, yeah, it's a terrible shame. And so she talked with them and worked it out. And I got sent over with a suitcase full of paint and brushes and painted a mural there with Snoopy.
Wow.
Snoopy and Woodstock in Muraleando there at the bus stop. Painted a big mural there. And that was a wonderful. I spent a week in Havana painting that. It was great. And then, I painted some murals elsewhere. I painted one in Tanzania a few years ago. I went there to teach cartooning for a couple of weeks in a little community called Sharati, doing volunteer work. And I painted a big mural on their school wall. And that was great. That was a wonderful experience too. And I put Snoopy in the mural.
That's just the kind of thing that, what a wonderful opportunity, right?
Yeah, oh my God, I couldn't pass that up. But I wound up going twice just to teach those kids cartooning. And then I would teach them virtually once a month. They'd set up a Zoom in the classroom and I'd go through lessons with them. And the company that I did that for was called the Mentor Project, and they disbanded last year. So I won't be going back. But it was a wonderful experience giving like that and getting back to the hero of, the core of what a hero is with Captain America and everything. It's sacrifice. And, it felt like a heroic act to do this. And I'm not trying to, self-aggrandize or anything, but little things you do during the day or choices that you make wind up making heroic choices because if it's a sacrifice, but if it's for something else, something bigger or good, you can call yourself a hero in the moment. You know, I mean, you can wear a costume and do it for money, or you can go do something worthwhile for no money. There's lots of ways to get down there to be in the hero thing.
I keep thinking of your guidance counselor back in high school and trying to explain what kind of career you were going to have. Well,
Oh my
first
God.
you're going to be
High
jousting and
school.
then
My
making a
counselor was like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
It
We
only
were
makes
just
sense
kind of
in
hands in the
retrospect.
air. You don't know what you're going to do, and you're going to keep doing it. And I did for a while. And
You've
I'm
averaged.
picturing your 80-page resume, and that's fantastic. I mean, it's, I've worn a few
Flipping
different
through,
hats myself, and I love
bed sheets, Panama,
it.
Havana, Batman.
Well,
Lee, what
it's
it's the
been an
typical
interesting
path.
life. It's been an interesting life, but it's a lot of not saying no to things and a lot of going, is this something that I'll regret doing later in life? Is this really a good thing? And some things I've turned down. And some things I'm like, oh my God, I don't have the money for that, but I gotta do it. I gotta do it somehow. That's
It's that regret factor of saying, well, if I don't do this, how much am I going to regret it next year or the year after? And
exactly. And that's
that's
kind
a
of
good
been
question.
my guiding thing through my life. I'm like, well, I have to build things that I can look back on and go, that was a neat week.
I think we tend to regret more the things we didn't do than the things we did, but
Absolutely. And
yes.
that exact quote, I think, is in my strip that will be up Friday. That's very odd that you would say that.
Well, I don't like to brag. I'm the center of the universe, but
I love a good coincidence.
Yeah. The Mark Twain quote, and I put that quote in my strip.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Well, we're going to
maybe Monday. I'm not sure, but
I'm going to ask you about Myth Tickle, but I just wanted to close the loop on this whole idea of heroes and kids and the importance of fictional heroes to children and the public you've faced. And I'm going to bare my heart a little bit. You know, my mom was a single mom. I didn't really grow up with a dad. And for me, growing up as a kid in the 60s, characters like the Lone Ranger, Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, Robin Hood, King Arthur, these were very important to me. These characters taught me sort of what manhood and heroism and doing the right thing and Batman and Captain America, and it taught me, you know, this is the right path a man should follow in this world. And I mean that very seriously. I mean, it sounds a little ridiculous that I was looking up the Lone Ranger as a role model, but I really was. And I know you've given that some thought, Justin, about how important that kind of thing is, but would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I grew up like you. I mean, King Arthur and all those guys, Lone Ranger, all the guys you named, they were super important to me. They were a guiding light, and I guess always kind of have been, maybe subconsciously later on in life, you know? But for some reason, I glommed onto that when I was a kid. And it set a compass that I've tried to keep going with, you know, forever. And I've kind of sought out these jobs where I could feel like that, you know, as goofy as they may be. You know, I needed it for some reason. I don't know. It felt like, oh, this is the right way to go.
Yeah. I mean, knowing you, I got to say that I think you probably represented those characters as well as anybody could have. You know, it's a responsibility. I know I've read interviews with Chris Evans that he took very seriously too. I mean, I have no idea what Chris Evans is like in real life, but his public persona is very much upholding, you know, the standard of Captain America. He doesn't want to do anything to break a kid's heart.
That's great. Well, they picked the right guy.
Wow. Tell us about your current work with Myth Tickle.
Oh, yeah. I got a comic strip that I have. It's syndicated online through a company called Go Comics. And they have all the big names like Bloom County and Peanuts and all those. And I've been with them for about, maybe 15 years, 14 years, just kind of keeping this thing going. I publish Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, a lot of repeats now because of I'm so busy, but I'm keeping it going. It's about characters from cultures all over the world, mythological characters, all kind of put in one place to try to get along. And they're all preteens, you know, around that age. And, you know, trying to be funny. it's a gag strip. And that's the name Myth for mythology and Tickle, because hopefully you'll get tickled by it. And I just put it together because it sounds like you're saying mystical with a lisp. And I thought that was funny at the time.
I've been silently practicing saying it, and it's
so you can jumble up pretty quickly. Go to gocomics.com and look up Myth Tickle, or just go to mythtickle.com, and I have a book there that is a collection of my strips that I published last year.
And it's a charming comic strip, has a lot of humor and heart. I recommend Myth Tickle. I think it's great.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
Well, I did a little comic strip with Captain America. I'll put it on the Facebook page.
Oh, very cool.
I did one a few years ago when one of the times Captain America died in the comics. So, you know, I'll post that so the listeners can check that out.
Love to see it.
Jim, I'm sure we can link to those from the episode.
Sure, yeah. We'll have that on our page too. Yeah.
Great. Cool.
Wow. I want your permission to post that picture of you dressed as Captain America.
Yeah.
Because it's just it's charming as heck.
That's all right, awesome. Yeah, I'm waving to little kids at a store opening. It's okay. Yeah, I wish I had more pictures. That's the only one I have.
But you look just like Chris Evans at a USO show. You look just like him.
Hey, cool.
No need to raise a motorcycle over your head, though. That's good.
God.
Wow. Well, this has been a really great episode. Justin, thanks so much for being a part of our show. These are the kind of episodes, and I know we say this a million times, but when we have guests like you on the show, this is what we aim for. And it's just a lot of fun hearing about your amazing life that and how it intersected with the guy in the movie.
Well, you know, that moment in the movie where he's getting ready to go out and he's kind of nervous and he knows he's in a silly costume and he's gonna go out there in front of all these people, and you see it in the actor's face, like, oh my God, you know. But you go out and you got to do what you got to do for a better good, and that it, what he did there in that minute that we're talking about today, it was a very heroic thing.
Yeah, it's his first time facing people that don't know what's going to happen next. Everybody in all these past minutes, he didn't know what's coming next. But this one, he's the only one that knows what's going to happen in the next thing, and it's up to him to make sure that minute happens.
And the hero makes a sacrifice, and the sacrifice there is, I'm going to look like a fool in front of all these guys who don't want to see me, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's for the war effort. And so that's what a hero does: sacrifices and does it.
Yeah.
You're here.
Wow. Right. Well, again, this has been a great episode. I'd like to thank our audience, too, for being a part of our show. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base on Facebook. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.